It's the Locked On Podcast Network. Local experts on the biggest stories.
You are Locked On Vikings, your daily Minnesota Vikings podcast.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Locked On Vikings on the Locked On Podcast Network. Welcome back to this program. A little late start this week on a Wednesday. Yours truly out in Boston for a couple leisure days and back to work today. Talking Vikings offseason, we're in that slow part of the year. OTAs start May 22nd, and then they'll have OTAs the next 3 weeks, followed by the mandatory minicamp, and then they'll have the rest of the summer off. My name is Sam Ekstrom, covering the Vikings, zonecoverage.com. The co-host is Sage Rosenfels, obviously the former quarterback for the Minnesota Vikings. Three topics to get to today. We'll talk about Brian Robinson's apparent return to Minnesota. We'll talk about two more division over-unders, the NFC South and the NFC East. But first, Sage, the big news while I was gone, we're going to talk about the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court getting involved in the sports world, ruling 7-2 that an anti-sports betting measure was unconstitutional, opening the door for individual states to legalize sports betting. So what I've heard from the people, the interviews I've listened to, is that in Minnesota alone, there are congresspeople and legislators estimating that in Minnesota, people might bet $2 billion with a B in the first year of legalization in sports betting. It does sound like an incredible monetization of a practice that people were already doing anyway, I think at $150 billion a year clip.
Yeah, it's a huge, huge business. And, you know, I don't know exactly how it's going to affect the league or the players or, you know, the actual game much. But I sort of wonder, you know, how much betting will go on in or just around NFL stadiums. My guess is that, Roger Goodell does keep betting away from, you know, the actual stadium experience, at least for a while, until the owners really start seeing if they can start making money, you know, off of these types of bets. And so I'm very intrigued to see, you know, what happens going forward in the next couple of years, not just state by state, but team by team, city by city, and just how this will all sort of, sort of break out. But yeah, at the end of the day, you know, will it actually affect the league much? You know, probably really not at all, other than the fact that there might just be more money in the pie and in the sort of in the sharing system that the owners have with the players. There might be more money involved in that, but I guess we shall see.
So I get the feeling that this isn't going to become league sanctioned for a while, because for it to be league sanctioned, wouldn't it have to be sanctioned in every state that the league is involved? Because, like, if it's not sanctioned in Minnesota, you couldn't have betting in the stadium. I doubt the NFL could have, you know, unless they have a website where you can bet only if you're in a legal state. Maybe that would work. But it's going to be interesting to see what precedent gets set first, because I think the NBA is probably the furthest along progressively with Adam Silver already talking about this, already endorsing this. I think he's talking about a 1% integrity fee that the league would take. And then, obviously, I'm sure the players might get cut in. Could the owners get cut in? Would they have live betting in the arenas? There are so many possibilities here. Do you feel like the NFL is going to be readily accepting, sort of like the NBA already is? Or do you sense that the ownership might push back at all on this?
I think it's all about the dollars. I think it's, you know, sort of like with the Tony Romo that the NFL basically made him cancel, or they made the NFL players not be a part of. If the owners aren't getting a piece of the pie, they're going to be against it. If they can find a way to get, whether it's that 1% or a 5% or some sort of a fee, or be a, just be a part of the, if they can be the house themselves, I see the owners jumping in. They're looking for every avenue to make money. The franchise, the Carolina Panthers, just got bought for about $2.3 billion today. So, really an all cash deal, supposedly that deal with the Panthers. The Tepper guy owns about 98%, I think, of that franchise by himself. One of the richest guys in the world, and but you know, he's got to pay back that or he's got to find a way to make profit on that $2.3 billion. They're looking for avenues anyway. If the owners feel like they can make money off of gambling and be a part of it, I think they'll sort of jump away from the sort of anti-gambling stance and the corruption within the game and, you know, all those types of things. I just don't think NFL players would take that risk of going out there and, you know, putting on a bad performance because, say, somebody was giving them, you know, $100,000 to throw a football game. There's so much money in football, and really the quarterback is the one that's most responsible for the outcome of a game. Well, these guys are, you know, the starters are making anywhere between, you know, $16 and $30 million now. $100,000 is not going to be worth, you know, throwing a game for a bad performance, even probably $1 million, you know, at this point, to ruin the reputation. And so I don't see the players, you know, being influenced by or being corrupted by any of the, you know, the possible gambling issues that might go on.
You would hope not. You would hope that there isn't a Pete Rose issue coming up here in the next 10 years where an all-time great gets busted for gambling. And I'm sure the league is going to try to clamp down on player gambling of any sort. But I think we also have to realize that the temptation, if people wanted to throw football games, the temptation has been there all along. It just hasn't been regulated. I mean, it's been unregulated in islands off the United States for years now, where people are spending all their money. And from my knowledge, you know, you're getting ripped off generally. You know, the lines aren't favorable, and it's tough to get your money back because they put a lot of restrictions on how you get paid. I imagine it'll be more accessible, probably a lot easier, probably a lot easier for people here with this regulation, if it gets passed, to go down the street to the local sports book and, you know, make your bet and then collect that same day, whereas it's tougher when you're offshore. So I think people are going to get more involved in this, and I'm interested to see who takes advantage. Is it DraftKings? You know, is it ESPN? Is it Yahoo Sports? Who becomes the authority for sports books? Because in this media climate, you know, when there's a lot of media organizations struggling, I think this is going to be an opportunity for them, too. They're going to have gambling shows. They're going to have gambling analysts, maybe even on the broadcast. You know, they'll have their officiating analyst, their color analyst, and their gambling analyst to talk about all that. It's going to be fascinating to see how they incorporate, how they sponsor, how they monetize this new industry. It may even start this year. They're talking about passing bills before week one of the season. So this is going to happen, Sage. I think people are going to have to get on board quickly. Do you get the sense that there's a lot of players that kind of low-key engage in gambling, maybe not on football, but on sports in general?
You know, I felt like in college, guys definitely gambled, not on our games, obviously, but you know, guys would gamble a little bit on NFL games or even top college football games or whatever, just as sort of something to do. But in the pros, I don't really remember anyone, you know, gambling, even really talking about the line or talking about the over or anything like that. And I said, I think there's just too much money that the players are making to, you know, sort of spend time on, you know, some sort of $1,000 bet here and there. There's just too many other things going on. And so it's interesting that you were saying like maybe ESPN gets involved or some of these media outlets get involved, which I think is definitely a possibility. My question is, does somebody like, say, ESPN, do they get involved, but is it not actual an ESPN? It's an ESPN-owned company, maybe, but it's not actually, doesn't have ESPN on the label. I would think that they would not want that. I don't want to call it a conflict of interest, but that sort of, you know, belief that they may be, that they're involved in gambling and that they're, you know, that this is part of their sort of monetary process is to get fans involved in gambling and things like that. So I can see them maybe owning some gambling or profiting off the whole gambling issue, but in sort of a roundabout way, and not actually throwing the label of ESPN or Fox Sports or CBS Sports or whatever it is sort of on the label of some sort of gambling website.
Yep, there's a lot of layers to it, and I think from what I've heard, Minnesota hopes to have something in place, at least from the representative I heard interviewing on KFAN radio, said they hope to have something in place by week one of the NFL season, so that could be coming up here in the next 3-4 months. Other news while I was gone, not quite as large scale, but still pretty interesting. Brian Robison makes the announcement via Instagram, I think was his social media avenue of choice, saying that he will be back in purple this year for his 12th season now, I believe it is, which took a lot of people by surprise. You know, didn't we expect him to be back all along? Well, I guess there was a little bit of a contract dispute. Brian Robison had about a $3.5 million cap hit for a player of his age and his declining role. That was a little bit high, but the Vikings have come to an agreement for him to restructure. And he'll be back once again, and he is still the longest-tenured Viking, Sage Rosenfels. Brian Robison, is he 35 now?
Yeah, that'd be about right. And when I was with the Vikings in 2009, and then again in 2000, sort of 11, 12, you know, at the time I didn't realize he was a younger player. He sort of seemed like he was more of a veteran that had been around for a while. I didn't realize he was that young. What people don't know about Brian Robison, by the way, he was an All-American shot putter at the University of Texas. He actually used a shot put in the offseason and get into some of these events, sort of national events around the country, sometimes trying to be like an Olympic shot putter. But here's my question to you.
Mm-hmm.
Chad Greenway, Brian Robison, I would say very similar careers, right? Long careers at one team, but neither guy was a, you know, six-time Pro Bowler, right? Which one would you rather have on your football team, or who had the sort of better Vikings career? And are either one of these guys, just because they're, you know, long-time, you know, sort of Viking, you know, players, because that just doesn't happen anymore, guys that play for, you know, 11, 12 years on one team, either one of these guys a possible Ring of Honor candidate just because of their, so not necessarily their, you know, Pro Bowls and All-Pro, you know, acknowledgments, but just the fact that they've been very solid football players for over a decade in a Vikings uniform?
Oh, man, great question. So I think Greenway's peak was better than Robison's. I think Greenway from like 2008 to 2012 or so was one of the best linebackers in football. Like, he never missed a game. Never missed a game. Only season he missed time was 2014. Otherwise, he played in every single game, obviously,
besides his rookie year.
Yeah, that's right. An important asterisk there. Tore his ACL his rookie year and then barely missed a game after that. But he was amongst the league leaders in tackles for about a five-year stretch. You know, he made interceptions. He got sacks, forced fumbles, fumble recoveries. He was putting up big numbers over that stretch. Brian Robison, another super durable guy, he never really had, I would say, like a dominant stretch where he was amongst the league's best. But, you know, 2011 to 13, he was putting up almost double-digit sacks those seasons. And Jared Allen on the other side of him. So it was Robison and Allen. He wasn't the premier pass rusher on those teams, but as a secondary piece.
He was actually, when I got to the Vikings, he was sort of the third defensive end a little bit. It was obviously Jared on one side. And I can't think of number 91's name. What was
Ray
that?
Edwards.
Ray Edwards. Yeah. So Ray and Robison would sort of split time a little bit. Or the interesting thing about Brian was that he was so strong in his lower body that he could play interior also. He wasn't just a defensive end. He could play defensive tackle. He was great on third down in those situations because then he could come in. He could play inside if they had, you know, the Vikings had a whole bunch of pass rusher, you know, type guys dressing for that game. So he could go in and play a three technique or play inside. If they needed him at the defensive end, he was a very good pass rusher, very, very strong at the point of attack, because of that lower body power. So very versatile defensive lineman for the Vikings and had a very good career and hopefully has one of his best years of his career in 2018.
Okay, let me ask you this. Guess how many sacks he has in his career and where does that number rank in Vikings history?
So it's 11 years. I'm going to say he's averaged six sacks a year. I know he had some near double digit sack years, but probably had a lot of years of three or four. I'm gonna say averaged about six, so something around 60 to 65 sacks over the course of his career. Is that somewhere in there?
Excellent guess. He has 60 in his career. That is tied for fifth in Vikings history with another former teammate of yours, a defensive tackle Kevin Williams.
Oh, wow. And Kevin, obviously, I mean, he's a Ring of Honor guy. For sure, it's at some point, or if he's not in, I don't think he's in already, but what a great player Kevin Williams was. I always thought Kevin Williams was almost a Hall of Fame type player, but his sacks, which are amazing, were exclusively from the interior D-line positions, which generally aren't, type positions of the nose tackle and the three technique. Robinson does a little both, a little more defensive end, but he's had a great career so far, and hopefully has a good one in 2018.
Yep, he and Everson Griffin are battling it out for that fourth all-time spot in sacks. Everson is at 61. Robinson is at 60. I think Everson probably ends up winning that battle. Not sure either of them catch Jared Allen. He's third at 85.5. John Randall running away at 114 sacks. That is unbelievable. And he was a defensive tackle as well, just a motor. So last item of the day, we kind of talked a lot about gambling and Brian Robinson. So let's do one more division in the over-under predictions game. Speaking of sports betting, what do the sports books think about the win totals of these teams? Let's do the NFC East today, starting with the New York Giants, the team that you kind of pegged as maybe a candidate to take a big leap this season with a new coach and their health re-intact, Saquon Barkley in the mix, Eli Manning still a QB. What do you think Vegas thinks about the Giants?
I think that there's always this optimism on teams that were terrible last year, and the Giants were one of those teams that were terrible. What's interesting about the Giants is 2 years ago they won 11 football games and made the playoffs. Then the whole thing fell apart. And would they win 3 games last year? Something like that.
Yeah.
So I think they're going to be improved, and I think they're sort of the hot team to improve a lot because they could, if Eli Manning could have a great running game like he had back in the day with guys like Brandon Jacobs and that great offensive line during the mid-2000s, could Eli then become a more effective quarterback? But at the end of the day, Saquon Barkley, this new guard, Will Hernandez, they're a work in progress, and they were a complete disaster last year. I look at them as a 5.5, maybe 6-win ball club. I'm going to say 5.5.
5.5, your guess. The Vegas line is 7.5. They're thinking almost 500 for the Giants this year. So
in a tough division.
Tough division. I guess, Beckham missed most of last year. Beckham is a big weapon, and he's been a catalyst in a lot of their success. So maybe the assumption is with Beckham back, Barkley running the ball, that offense will put up enough points to be competitive, I would imagine. Pretty lofty estimate for the Giants. How about the defending Super Bowl champion, Philadelphia Eagles? What do you think their over-under is at?
I have the Eagles as one of the best teams in the NFL, definitely top five, if not the best. I mean, they're the reigning champions. It seems like they got better this offseason with draft picks and with some free agent acquisitions and things like that. But it seems like nobody is at, we've been doing this now, this is their third division. It seems nobody's given the 12.5 or 13.5 number. So I'm going to go with them with 11.5.
They are at 10.5. 10.5 for the Eagles, which is actually the tied for the top in the NFL. They don't give anybody more than that. So everyone kind of funnels to the middle in these projections. So the Eagles are at 10.5. They are projected to win the division. What do you think about then the Washington Redskins? No more Kirk Cousins. It's Alex Smith in town. And I'll be honest with you, this one surprised me. The Washington Redskins over-under.
Ooh, surprise. Yes, I was either really good or really bad. Yeah. In that division, so they went 10.5 and then 7.5. You got to think they're somewhere in the middle. I'm going to go 8.5 with the Redskins.
Well, this is why it surprised me, because I would have said something like that as well. Vegas has 5.5 wins for Washington. That is, I'm surprised they're not flipped with New York, to be honest with you. 5.5 for a quarterback that all Alex Smith does is win in the regular season.
So Alex Smith, over the course of his career, especially the last two-thirds of his career, is that game manager, and usually game manager sort of smart enough to figure out ways to win football games, stay away from turnovers. So that 5.5 is very surprising. I mean, the bettors, the people in charge of these things, must be really down on either the roster or something. I mean, Kirk Cousins, I like him as a quarterback. He's the new Vikings quarterback, but I like Alex Smith too to win football games. I really do think they're a 7-8 win football team that really surprised me to have them at 5.5.
Yeah, and it's not like they had, you know, an abysmal defense. They've still got the same coach. They don't have, like, change there. And as far as quarterback goes, that probably a lateral move going from Cousins to Smith. So that's curious, and that leaves the Dallas Cowboys.
Well, I was going to say, there must be something with that. You know, you have the Eagles at 10.5, but very well could be, you know, 11 or 12 wins. You've got the Giants is what these casinos or whatever are seen as, you know, in a much improved football team up to 7 or 8 wins this year. And obviously the Cowboys, I think they'll be back too. They had that sort of disaster of a season last year. I think they went 8-8, but, you know, Ezekiel Elliott was out, suspended for multiple games, and they had a whole bunch of injuries on the back end and some issues, and had a real down year from the year before, which they won 13 games. So, you know, two teams in this division, well, the other three teams in this division other than Washington, one won the Super Bowl last year, but 2 years ago you had, you know, the two teams that had 13 and 11 wins, which is also who, you know, Washington will have to go against this season.
Mm-hmm. And then that team, that fourth team, is Dallas, and I think this is probably playing into it. What do you think Vegas believes about Dallas?
I don't think Dallas is, you know, a 10.5, but I do see them back in sort of the hunt for the playoffs. I'm going to put them at 9.5.
They are 8.5, according to Vegas. They won 9 games a year ago, taking a little step back from Dak Prescott and Ezekiel Elliott's rookie year. But they'll be in the mix, like you said. You know, Dallas is a tough place to play, and they're not going to have as many weapons this year. You know, Jason Witten, that was my fantasy football stalwart, like fourth-round draft pick tight end. I love Jason Witten. He's gone. Dez Bryant, he doesn't have a team right now, to my knowledge, and they're a little depleted in terms of their pass catchers. So Dak Prescott will have to carry things on his own a little bit more this year. But again, that offensive line in Dallas is always so good, so I'm sure they'll put it together and win plenty of games.
Some people have the Cowboys as the team with the worst wide receiver / tight end threats in the NFL, and you know, obviously that's not great news for Dak Prescott, who I see as, you know, probably one of the top 5 young quarterbacks, you know, in his first, second, third year in the league, and yeah, they basically have no receiver threats. I mean, you know, Cole Beasley's he's a slot guy, and you know, so they lost Dez Bryant, lost Jason Witten. They never really replaced them with premier players, whether through the draft or through free agency.
Sage, good stuff. We'll touch base with you probably on Friday and talk about the NFC South, and we'll continue our division preview leading up to Vikings OTAs. Sage, have a great rest of your day.
Yep, can't wait to see these guys back on the field. Should be nice.
Yeah, absolutely. He's Sage Rosenfels. I'm Sam Ekstrom. LockedOnVikings.com, the website. Also follow along on iTunes. It's the Locked On Podcast Network.